A Winter Wonder, A Pride and Prejudice Novella Variation, Chapter 2, October 1812. Chapter 2, October 1812. After a few weeks of living at Pemberley, Elizabeth Darcy keenly felt the estate's magnitude, but slowly found her way around more easily. Her husband had spent nary a day with her before estate matters, matters he had long neglected due to his trip to Hertfordshire, marriage, and honeymoon, occupied his early mornings and afternoons. He was always careful to arrive back home from any rides in time to dress for dinner, and so a happy routine befell the house. Elizabeth would wake later than she used to, find her bed already empty, and join her mother and sisters in the sunny breakfast parlor. Every morning, a fresh-cut rose lay on her plate, and with the weather becoming drearier as the calendar spent, the mystery began to nag at her. Lifting the morning's offering to her nose with a pert smile on her face, her younger sisters giggled across the table. Elizabeth caught Georgiana's eye and made a face. "What do you know that I do not? How do these roses grow so well? We've walked the gardens, and while they are beautiful, they are appropriately barren for the season. Fitzwilliam did not show you the greenhouses? We have six on the far side of the stables." Elizabeth frowned, as she should have realized an estate this large would own numerous hothouses. The solarium on the back of the London townhome was an excellent example of such extravagance, though Elizabeth knew it was not to be boastful that the Darcy homes possessed such charms. The former Mrs. Darcy had been too ill to enjoy much of the outdoors, and her devoted husband, Fitzwilliam's father, brought the outdoors to her. Absently, Elizabeth smoothed her skirts over her burgeoning midsection before taking a seat. In truth, she had not explored by the stables, owing to the lone argument she and her husband had since arriving home. In Scotland, Elizabeth had learned to ride a horse, and enjoyed her jaunts to the countryside with her husband very much. The escapades had served perfectly to preserve their privacy, as her youngest sister Lydia had joined them to hide her own pregnancy. While the babe survived, Lydia did not. Elizabeth had hoped to use the same tactic to escape the larger congregation of family now residing with them for the winter, at least until her girth proved too wide for such exercise. But her husband would not hear of it. He was adamant it was too great a risk to her health and the child growing inside of her. "Elizabeth, did you not hear me?" Kitty sipped her drink, watching the effect of her louder voice startle her elder sister. "I beg your pardon," Elizabeth shook her head briefly and inhaled deeply. "Forgive me, my mind was elsewhere. What was the question?" "She asked if you received any letters from Lydia. Kitty is cross because she has written half a dozen times now with no response." Georgiana knitted her brows together, much in the same way Fitzwilliam did when he was frustrated. The resemblance between the two siblings always struck Elizabeth at the oddest times. Clearing her throat and looking down at her plate, she struggled for an excuse. "Perhaps the post is merely delayed." "You'll receive letters from Jane, I've seen them," Kitty complained. "Yes, but Jane has written that Lydia is ill. Perhaps she has not the strength to write back. I'll ask Jane to include some lines in her next letter." Elizabeth hoped to gloss over Kitty's query when Mrs. Bennet entered the room, complaining about some trifling matter regarding her wash basin. Releasing a sigh of relief, Elizabeth tried to eat more of her breakfast, but her appetite had disappeared. "Mama, if Lydia is so very ill, I should hasten to Scotland straight away." "Lydia is fine, dear. She has sweet Jane to care for her. Besides, if you leave Pemberley, who will comfort her dear mama with stories? Mrs. Bennet placated her youngest living daughter, propagating the lie that must save them all from Lydia's shame.
"You would not suggest leaving for Scotland to avoid your punishment, would you?" Mary Bennet found a seat at the table with her own plate of food. As Elizabeth Darcy's stomach lurched and tumbled with her uneasiness of lies, the back-and-forth arguments at the table reminded her so of Longbourn, back when her family was whole and still had their papa, and Lydia for that matter. That small happy thought lifted her spirits as Kitty sputtered more and more anger.
Elizabeth needed a change of subject, and quickly. "Georgiana, what does the house do for the tenants for Christmas and Boxing Day?" Elizabeth managed a bite of fruit after asking her question. All heads turned to Georgiana, and for a moment, the peace restored.
"I am not," Georgiana frowned and played with the tablecloth with her fingers. "I was so young, I do not remember. Before the mood could descend further into a melancholy, Elizabeth announced that she would ask Mrs. Reynolds. A brief silence took over before the new Mrs. Darcy made her next announcement. And I do believe my sisters and I should visit the tenants today. Elizabeth triumphantly looked at the clear skies outside. But it's cold, Kitty cried. Generosity does not know a season.
Thank you, Mary, Elizabeth said. I am certain with warm bricks and blankets, we shall be as comfortable as may be.
I will ask you and Georgiana to gather up any old linens and spare cloth. My mother and I can see to the baskets of food, and Mary, you might talk to the stable master to prepare the wagons and warming items. In Elizabeth's mind, the ladies of the house had spent far too much time doing little, and a bit of distraction was warranted. I'm afraid the cold will not do well for my nerves. I am much older than you young ones. I should not presume to accompany you on your visits.
No, it is best that I stay behind. Mrs. Bennet tittered on about her constitution while her daughter smirked. Never in their time at Longbourn had Mrs. Bennet deigned to visit tenants.
Elizabeth Darcy stood and swept over to her mother's chair, offering the woman a loving care which Mrs. Bennet eagerly accepted as she craved attention.
Of course, dear Mama, I would not expect you to go with us. But I could use your experience in planning the baskets, Elizabeth strategically plumped up her mother's ego. And you certainly should remain behind to help entertain our cousins with your sister while we are gone.
Mrs. Bennet's smile faded, and the girls' attitudes became so jubilant over their new purpose for the day that the room sounded once more joyful and vibrant.
A sly fox, early in his fifth decade, stood on deck of the HMS Plato, watching the crew heave mooring lines over the sides to the waiting men below on the dock.
25 years gone since he last stepped foot in his home country. Forced out of his family and banished to seek his fortunes in the jewel of the British crown, he inhaled the bitter English air, feeling it mightily unfortunate to not return with his pockets lined in riches.
You there, who gave you permission to come above deck?
The man flinched slightly at the gruff address, but held his palms up by his chest in a mock surrender. My orders were for all civilians to stay below or in their staterooms. The executive officer of the Plato challenged the man as he stood innocently by the railing. The passenger flashed the officer a charming smile.
No harm done, sir. I merely wished to observe our arrival. It has been many years since I've been home.
The executive officer grumbled something about civilians seeking safe passage, a burden to naval operations, but he had more pressing matters to attend to before the plank could be fastened. Shouts and jeers rang through the air as the crew of the Plato eagerly wanted leave, and the dockhands treated the boat like any other arrival, slowly. Eventually, the great vessel became secured, allowing cargo and riffraff alike to disembark. The Plato would likely spend many months in port, repairing her numerous injuries from no less than 3 naval skirmishes from India to England. Although a naval vessel, she was no battleship. Impressed into His Majesty's service from a loyal merchant, she was haphazardly outfitted with guns and best used to ferry cargo and much-needed supplies. Not a thrilling assignment for any sailor, until the American embargo put further strain on England's perpetual fight with the French. Plato had not sailed robustly home. She had limped. Within the hour, the man held his measly belongings and wound his way to a local pub for a much-needed drink while regaining his land legs. 2 months aboard the Plato had thwarted his balance. Other nabobs had suffered far worse injury from the cannon fire and general dangers of a sailing ship. If only one of the rich turkeys in a stateroom, rather than the dingy hold the man had traveled in, had died mid-voyage, the man would have secured an easy payday. Fickle fortune had not shined on her wayward son during the voyage, unless one counted his survival. But he had nipped some coins before escaping topside to avoid his victim's realization. Paying for the drink with money earned by another, he plunked down in a dark corner of the pub with his mug of ale and listened. In time, an opportunity to make more would find its way. It always did for Alistair Darcy. Holed up in his study, Fitzwilliam Darcy carefully examined the plans for spring planting created by his steward, Mr. Hampton. Possessing over 75 fields of arable land, the grid before him explicitly labeled crops, grazing lands, and fallow fields for both the plots farmed by the estate proper and Darcy's tenants. The western border caught his attention as he noticed 2 fields unusually labeled fallow
out of rotation. Have the Cortlands decided not to farm? Ernest Hampton gripped his hat in his hands a little tighter. I rode out last week with no sign of the Cortlands to be seen. The house inside, empty.
Darcy rubbed his chin and pondered. The Cortlands were a four-generation family of Pemberley tenants. It was unfathomable for them to suddenly pack up and leave without warning.
Have you served notice to the inn for the vacancy?
The steward shook his head. I thought it best to wait for you, sir, and with it only being two fields. The Cortland farm actually composed of six fields,
but the main house had farmed four of them, as Mr. Cortland negotiated the lower lease amount in exchange for the use of the land.
Darcy pinched his brow as he considered his options. It would be best to open the property to his current tenants if any of the other families wished to move. But the squabbling and discord such a decision could create was a legitimate worry. The last time lands on the Darcy estate opened for new tenants was over 7 years ago, when his father still managed the estate. The tenant families of Pemberley simply did not leave. Darcy dipped a quill and encircled the four fields he knew resided with the lease of the Cortland farm. After making his notations, he handed the plans back to the steward. We shall tell all families of the Cortland vacancy, and any interested in moving locations may let us know by Christmas. We shall choose by drawing lots.
Mr. Hampton scratched his head.
A fair plan, but I might suggest some families are more worthy candidates than others. If you do not take offense, sir. A sizable farm needs proper management. None taken, we shall choose the family that moves to greater responsibility, but it will appear as if drawn by lot, so as to prevent any ill will towards the family that is chosen. The steward laughed, and Darcy reached out to shake his hand. Darcy greatly respected Mr. Hampton and complimented the modern layout of crop rotation he proposed. How do you feel about managing this Herculean task without my presence? You are aware Mrs. Darcy and I plan to be in London for our sister's debuts. Ernest Hampton sat back in his chair and gulped. His face flexed and grimaced as he vacillated on a response. I am not overconfident in my abilities, sir, and this being the first planting we are working together, I understand you'd be nervous, Mr. Darcy, but I assure you that I am up to the task. Darcy considered his steward carefully, taking slightly too much enjoyment in the poor man's anxieties. If he was honest with the man, there was nothing more he wished than to forgo London altogether and stay at Pemberley with his wife and family forevermore. On further consideration, perhaps a touch of pruning the particular family members and residents might be in order, but on the whole, the first month home at Pemberley had passed peacefully. Before he could respond to Mr. Hampton, the study door opened, and Mrs. Reynolds carried in a tray of tea and refreshments. Darcy cocked his head to one side as he found it odd for the housekeeper herself to fulfill such a duty. And how may I help you, Mrs. Reynolds? Darcy anticipated the housekeeper's aim as he shuffled a few papers on his desk.
Forgive me, sir, but Mrs. Darcy, Miss Darcy, and the Miss Bennets have just come to me with an alarming plan, and while it is not my place, I thought you should be apprised of it.
Darcy raised his eyebrow at the elderly housekeeper that she would dare undermine Mrs. Darcy's authority in the household.
I thought I made it clear that my full faith and confidence resides with Mrs. Darcy in all matters of the household.
Of course, sir, it's just that their plans are to visit all of the tenant homes and I only worried for Mrs. Darcy's health.
Darcy smirked at the housekeeper, wringing her hands like a mother hen. It was not officiousness that brought Mrs. Reynolds to him, but concern, for it was clear to all with experience in such things that the Darcy heir was well on his way.
Has my wife spoken to the stable master to arrange for bricks and blankets?
The housekeeper nodded.
Yes, sir, she had her sister Miss Mary make such arrangements.
Then I believe my wife is taking all precautions needed and will not tarry out of doors longer than her health may sustain.
Reynolds nodded, accepting the master's stance on the matter. Before she could leave, though, Darcy called her attention.
I know the house and servants might be haunted by my parents' experiences, but I can assure you the current Mrs. Darcy is hale and hearty. The only cause that will incite her to be foolhardy in care of her person is the suspicion that she is being coddled. Give her a chance, Mrs. Reynolds.
As you say, sir, it shall be done.
Mr. Hampton paled at the exchange before him. Once the two men were again alone, Darcy took one look at the poor steward's ghostly face and burst out laughing.
Buck up, Hampton. One lumber, too.
The steward's hand shook as he accepted his cup. Hampton was new to running an estate of this magnitude, as Mr. Richards retired last year. But he had trained faithfully under Mr. Richards for many years.
Some gentlemen expected their stewards to fully run the estate, but Mr. Darcy preferred a partnership. Still, it was early in their alliance with one another, and Ernest Hampton did not know of a safe topic after such a personal conversation concerning Mrs. Darcy. He had so rarely interacted with Mr. Darcy proper without Mr. Richards to handle the heavy lifting in a conversation. "You're not married, are you, Hampton?" Ernest shook his head and took a drink of tea. "I was a bachelor a long time myself." Darcy raised his cup in acknowledgement of their solidarity. "I can assure you, when the right lady comes along, there's no questioning the Almighty's plan." Hampton nodded and braved an opinion of his own. "It is touching that you trust Mrs. Darcy to know her own mind on such matters. Not all husbands are so trusting." Hampton gulped, praying his forwardness did not sound critical. "Ah, I only said if she suspected she was being coddled. Eat up, man. We're taking a tour of the tenant farms ourselves, just as soon as we see which way her wagon travels." Darcy winked at his steward and pulled a cord to call a servant. After instructing the footman to tell the stables to ready the horses, Darcy helped himself to the repast, just as he had encouraged his steward to do so. He absolutely trusted his wife, but he loved and cared for her even more so.